Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It is Friday.
Yeah, I love Fridays.
There's a lot of reasons I love Fridays. The weekend is close. Usually, well, during football season, it's football Friday and get ready for football games. I love Fridays because Mello is on the show with me. Hi, Mello.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in today. Always good to have you here.
So fun.
Yeah. Now, Mello is going to, now, I don't know if I've announced it on the show, but in 2 weeks, in 17 days from now, so that's 2 weeks and 3 days, I will be going on a two-week vacation.
Well-deserved.
Well, I don't know about deserved, but I definitely want it. I need it. Anyway, so I won't be doing the show for 2 weeks. In the past, we've had some other people fill in. We've done a combination of best-of shows, and we've done, or we've just played news or whatever during this time, but Mello is going to, she's going to grab the reins and do all 2 weeks.
Wow, yeah, so be kind, everybody.
Brave, brave girl. 2 weeks of shows with Mello. Some of our regular scheduled guests will be on. For instance, Marianne Hamilton is going to come on the first Tuesday. I'm trying to get to that page so I can tell you the exact date. But yeah, Marianne will be on the first Tuesday
August
of the
6th.
Month. Oh, you're all over it, girl.
Yeah, I got my book right.
I found it too. I will be leaving on August 29th.
July.
July 29th. Mm-hmm. I'll actually be leaving. I'll be getting up. Believe it or not, I have to get up earlier than usual to catch the airplane because we're leaving at 5 sharp. From Morris Columbus Travel.
Oh.
And so, and I can get in here, you know, like quarter after five or whatever. So I actually have like a 15 minutes or half an hour earlier than usual.
Mm.
So, we are going on a river cruise in Europe.
I've heard they're so fun. I'm so excited for you.
I am excited too and a little nervous because I have never... I guess Hawaii technically is off the North American continent, but other than Hawaii, I've never been out of North America. Mm-hmm. I've been to Mexico and Canada, and Hawaii, but I've, you know, going to Europe is a little, we had a meeting about it. They spent like a half an hour on pickpockets and how to secure your belongings because I guess pickpockets, they used to call them cut purses back in the day. Pickpockets are very, very, very skilled in Europe, the streets of Europe.
Really?
And so, for instance, if you have a bag, like a lot of you women like to carry a purse, they recommend you use a safety pin and close it with a zipper and then safety pin the zipper to the bag so that someone can't just come by and zip it and grab something.
Oh, my.
Yeah. They don't recommend you carry anything of value. We're like, what about phones? Our phones are valuable. They're like, well, yeah, most people will carry their phones, but people are pretty hyper aware of their phone most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, yeah, if you have, don't carry your passport. You will get it stolen. Don't carry a lot of money. If you have nice jewelry, leave it at home. Or if you have to take it on the trip, I guess there are safes in each of your cabins mm-hmm. on the ship. But they're like, yeah, don't let the cut purses, the pickpockets, see all the cool stuff you have.
Wow.
Because
and
they'll come after you.
Did they talk to you about, like, when people approach you and try and get you to, like, buy stuff from them? And those are distractors too, right?
Yeah, you're right on with that one. I guess they'll come up and they'll have something really cool for you. They're like, beautiful lady, here's a rose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy giving the rose is not the thief. He's the accomplice. He's trying to distract you while his partner is behind you trying mm-hmm. to steal stuff from you.
Right. Or I've also heard something like they'll like give it to you and say it's free, but then expect a payment as well.
Kind of like the old, you ever been in a big city where you go up to an intersection, the red light, and a guy starts washing your windows and then he expects you to pay him? He's like, no, don't wash my window. I'm not going to pay. No. And then he finishes and then you're like,
true.
I guess I got to give him something.
I know. Yeah, so frustrating.
Anyway, so yeah, so I'm going to Europe. Mello is going to host the show. During the time that I'm gone, she has some of her own guests that she has arranged.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be fun. I you know, we talked a little bit, Mello, yesterday about you, you know, exploring your areas of expertise. Mm-hmm. I said, for instance, you're an expert in real estate. You said, no, I'm not. I'm not an expert. Well, you kind of are in certain areas anyway, yeah. Like staging a house.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have some realty stuff. On the air, general, we don't want to get too specific, but general information about some, the state of the housing market here in Southern Utah. Mm-hmm. And, I think, I'm actually looking forward to listening to your shows when I come back because we'll archive them all.
Oh, no. And dissect
and
them.
hearing you talk about staging homes and, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't realize, and you can address this, mm-hmm. How important it is to make your house look like really nice. Like to me, I remember selling houses in the past and I'm like, okay, well, here's the house, buy it.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah. And I've learned through Jeremy Larkin and through you that, if you want really top dollar for your house, a few hundred or thousand dollars, not a hundred thousand, but a few hundreds or a few hundred, or a few thousands dollars could make your house worth 50 or 100,000 more to a potential buyer.
Right. And they linger longer.
Linger longer is good.
Mm-hmm. When you have like furnishings they can sit on and like feel like where they would put items in the home, because it's kind of hard for some people to visualize mm-hmm. what they would do with the space, especially when things are like awkwardly shaped or there's like a mirror along one wall. You can just dress it up with furniture.
I remember when we bought a house about, I think it was 12 or 13 years ago. This is two houses ago for me. But it was a model home, and they had staged it. Because it was a model home, they had staged it really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going through the house, and I was just like, this is amazing. And it wasn't realistic. Like, they didn't have a TV in the family room. Okay, this is America. We got TVs in our family room. That's just the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. So it was staged with no TV in the family room. But I didn't go, oh, they suck. They don't have a TV in the family room. I went, wow, this looks great. Right. I want to live here.
Right, right. And if you pay attention to what the builders are doing, the builders are getting top dollar for their product. And that's also another reason why they add staging to it.
Yeah. Made me want to buy the house. And we did buy the house. Fair. And we did put a TV in that family room.
Yeah.
I mean, they had, instead of a TV, they had a giant old-fashioned clock on an easel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, that's not, I mean, come on, I'm not going to do that in my real house, but it looks good for a staged house.
Right, but you can see the space would all be occupied by that, by yeah. TV too. So it shows you there's the room for it.
It's like an art form, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's I really enjoy staging.
Is it like interior decorating? Is it the same skill set, or is it?
I guess it is. I'm not an official interior decorator. My ex-husband was in the military, and I moved probably about 18 to 20 times. So I had a lot of experience setting up homes and taking them down. So I just get in there and visualize the space, and I have a couple of storage units with furniture and decorations, and I just go shopping in my storage unit. And
I talked to my wife about this last night. I want to get your opinion because you're an expert in this area. So when you stage a house, you get the house ready. I don't know if staging mm-hmm. is the word I want to use here, but when you get the house ready to sell, you want people to be wowed, right, when they come in. But it's not necessarily long-term stuff that you're staging for. You want them to be wowed for this moment so they'll make an offer on the house. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I kind of approach it differently than wowing them. I want them to feel at home.
Okay.
I want them to feel comfortable, and I want to open up the space. So I wouldn't put a couch in front of a doorway or make a really small walkway in between the door and the wall. I would open it up and flip the furniture excuse me, the other way. Hmm. And then, like, in the kitchen, I'm not going to put all of the cups and plates and stuff in the cupboards, but I am going to maybe open up a cookbook and put it on an easel in the corner. Hmm. And maybe put a couple of cutting boards and set those up. And maybe, like, a little vignette with, like, some plants on a round platter so it just looks... I want your eye to move around the space, up and around and over, so you visualize the whole space and you're not focusing on like one little scratch on the wall, or you're not focusing on something that is just going to distract you from enjoying the house.
Now, in selling a house, if the house is empty, if someone's not living in it,
mm-hmm.
Is it important for you to make sure every room is staged, or can you leave a couple of rooms?
You can leave a couple of rooms empty, especially if it's like a 5 or 6 bedroom house. Okay. I would focus on the main areas like the kitchen, the living room, the dining room, and maybe the master bedroom and a primary and a secondary bathroom are what I would stage.
Okay. Okay.
So just kind of keep it. And I also like to do the back patio area, because that's such an important part of like where we live, is enjoying that outdoor space.
I was
going to
ask about that, because if you have someone that, say, is my age, mm-hmm. I'm still calling myself middle-aged, although I'm probably a little past middle-aged because I'm not going to live to be 116.
but you could.
Guys my age, we want a cool patio. We mm-hmm. want a smoker or a nice grill. We want, you know, a picnic table. And outdoor kitchen would be fantastic, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of us are like, well, maybe I can't afford that one. But you know what I mean? So the outdoor space, the patio, backyard?
Yeah. No, I have like a little patio set that I bring, and I set the table with like a table runner, and I set like
a table runner outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, I have nice. A couple that I use because they get sun bleached really fast. And then I'll like set like a platter, like a big wooden tray, and I'll put like some outdoor cups that are like really fun, like mason jars with cute straws, and like some plates and napkins.
Got to be lemonade, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it looks like, oh my goodness, I could come out here and I could have a glass of lemonade and I could enjoy this patio with my family. You want them to like kind of move in their head,
yeah,
into the house. So it's easier when you have those kinds of things.
Although I got to say, selling an outdoor space when it's 114 out probably isn't the easiest thing.
It's been hard. I had to show houses this week, and wow, it's been hot.
Yeah.
Hot.
All right, back to my vacation. Again, we're going to Europe. I am nervous a little. Couple of things, a long plane trip. It's basically 12 hours on a plane, and that's not counting layovers and stuff. Mm-hmm. That makes me nervous. I'm a big guy. I don't fit in airplane seats very well, although people tell me international travel, there's a little more room and mm-hmm. stuff. But so we'll see about that. And I've never been on a river cruise. The cruise ships I've been on, a couple of them, you know, 3,500 guests. This one, it's 150 passengers.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's small.
I like that. So it won't be like going in to eat and you're like in a huge line with all these people. It'll be a little
right.
less.
In fact, I don't think they do buffets on these river cruises. They actually, you sit down and they serve you. You have a lot of choices. Mm. But you don't. It's not like the cattle call like you have on
yes, it feels like
the,
that, huh?
Some of the big ships, yeah. There is a new trend in travel, and we're not doing this, and I wonder if Mello would do this. It's called mystery travel.
Oh.
Yeah, there's companies out there, and it's actually gaining popularity. People are into it. There are specific websites, Pack Up and Go, Magical Mystery Tours. Let's see, there was one other one that I was going to mention. Journey with two E's, J-O-U-R-N-E-E. And basically what they do is... You fill out a little questionnaire. Okay, I want to go on vacation. You send them your money, and I don't know if these are expensive. I imagine they're not cheap, but they're probably about average for a vacation. In the questionnaire, you tell them, okay, I want to go to a place with a beach, or I'm into American history, or I'm into you know world history, or whatever it may be. And then they some of them will give you hints as to where you might go, but they're just hints. They don't tell you. You don't know where you're going until you show up at the airport on the day of the trip. They do send you a packing list. You know, maybe you're going to a cold weather place, or maybe you're going to a beach, and so that you know what to pack. But it's gaining huge popularity. It's called mystery travel. Would you do that?
I would definitely do that.
Oh, you would?
I would definitely do that. I would love that.
Yeah.
That'd be right up my alley. I feel like I do that anyway when I travel, because I have my daughter plan my whole itinerary, and then she sends it to me, but I never have time to read it. And so when I get on the plane, then I'm like, oh, what am I going to be doing? And then it tells me all the hotels. So I feel like I do that a little bit. I just know the state I'm going to. So I would definitely do that.
I would think, me personally, I'm like, you know, whatever, on trips. My wife, though, she wants to know. She's not one of those people that we have to be doing something the whole time, but she's one of those people that wants to know what we are doing. Mm. You know what I mean? And so I think for her, that would be very hard for my wife.
Yeah. It might be. I think it would be super fun.
It would create, instead of fun, it would create stress for her. And we don't need to do that.
No
more stress.
Happy life.
Yeah, exactly. If you're interested again in mystery travel, the website's again Magical Mystery Tours, Pack Up and Go, and Journey with two E's. are the three big ones that do. But I guess there's the writer of this article, which was on Deseret.com, says there are at least 15 mystery travel websites out there where you just sign up and say, I can spend $3,000 to take me away.
I love it. I definitely am going to look into that.
Spontaneous. I like the spontaneity there for you, Mello.
I do. I think it'd be awesome.
I think, I don't know if it's because I'm older than you or just raised differently. I don't like that much spontaneity. It's a little too much for me.
I feel like my whole life is spontaneous. I look at my calendar. I'm like, oh, what am I doing today? Let's see.
It's a surprise. Good morning. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So it's 9:24. So we're good. A couple other things I want to talk about. First of all, I did not watch the press conference last night with Joe Biden, but
I sat in the room where it was on, and I had to be on something on my phone because I was so just. I have a hard time watching him and not feeling embarrassed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. There was a poll done by, I think it was ABC News, NBC, it was one of those, right after the debate, said, now the debate is over, do you feel better or worse about Joe Biden being the president and running for president again? 83% of people said they feel worse, not better.
Yeah.
Then, and this was after, of course, the disastrous debate.
Oh, and that was hard to watch.
So, the question, Kurt Malberg, by the way, fantastic writer for Intellectual Takeout. I love this. It seems like everything he writes is just really, really good. He writes an article, and it's basically the article is calling out all the White House, all the people that cover the White House,
mm-hmm.
and says, you guys knew about what was going on with Joe Biden. You knew the cognitive decline was immense. You knew that he was losing it. And yet you wouldn't tell the American public.
You know what makes me mad about that is that they came out before the debate and they had said that the conservatives were creating videos using deep AI fakes.
Yeah, which was not true.
Right, to make him look like he was declining. And then everybody sees the debate and now they're like, hey, liar, liar, pants on fire. He was declining and you tried to trick us.
So in this article by, again, Kurt Malberg, intellectualtakeout.org, he cites a couple of examples of exactly what you're talking about. He said, last month, Washington Post gave four Pinocchios, calling them liars, to vital videos showing Biden wandering away from a group of G7 leaders, apparently in a world of his own, saying Democrats were using that, that Republicans were using it as pernicious attempts to mislead and reinforce an existing stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
They denied it. They're like, no, you guys are making this crap up.
Mm-hmm.
Jen Psaki, who formerly White House press secretary, now works for MSNBC, said she called the New York Post criticism of Biden's wandering off as, quote, inaccurate, false reporting. Okay,
gosh.
Thanks. Circle back, Jen. and then just a couple of months ago, MSNBC host Joe Scarborough described Biden as beyond cogent and better than he's ever been.
Oh, my word.
What? Wow.
Mm-mm.
Wow. So, anyway, Kurt just basically says, here's all these reporters, and their job was to tell us what was going on with the White House. And never mind Karine Jean-Pierre, whatever her name is, and all the lies and spins she put on everything. They should have known every time Joe Biden took the podium, every time they had to talk to him, they should have noticed something wasn't right. And if they did notice it, first of all, if they didn't notice, they're terrible reporters. If they did notice it, they're liars.
I know. I think that they are in the pocket of the White House, but I also think that people in the White House, who's really in control? Because he's obviously the puppet. So who's actually pulling the strings? That's why they haven't said anything, because they all want the power.
So Kurt references back in the early 1900s, President Woodrow Wilson. I guess Wilson, during his second term, had a stroke. He still had almost a year and a half left in his presidency. He had a stroke, and they said he was barely alive.
Oh,
he
my.
Couldn't hardly talk. And, I mean, he wasn't there at all. Behind the scenes, Wilson's wife, Edith, stepped in to effectively serve as de facto commander-in-chief. She even earned herself the title Secret President. And is now, the history books have called her the first woman to run the government. the parallels between Woodrow Wilson and Joe Biden's maybe not exact, but you wonder if maybe Jill was the one making the calls.
Yeah, I had never heard that story. That's so interesting.
So do you think, first of all, I have kind of differing opinions about this whole Joe Biden running for president thing. They want him out. The Democrats are pushing, about half of them are pushing to have him out. Joe has said, I'm not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's Jill talking, not Joe. She's told him, you tell them this and, you know. Do you think if Joe Biden were to eventually, and by the way, Jimmy Kesson, our political analyst, says it's never going to happen. Joe will not step down. He has $200 million in the bank in campaign money, and he has all the delegates. And the only way he would step down is if he voluntarily said, I'm going to do it, and Jill won't let him do it.
Mm.
Okay, but if he were to step down, big if, but if he were to step down, do you think anyone that they would name in his place would have a chance against Trump?
Kamala Harris, no.
Not a chance, no.
I had heard rumors before that Michelle Obama.
Yeah, that's out there.
Right.
But the reports, the things I've read about it is she has zero interest in that whatsoever.
Yeah.
She does not want it.
I don't think Hillary Clinton would come back in. I hope not.
Well, that would, the good news there, that would guarantee Trump's winning, I think, because she is a much reviled figure, in my opinion, in the country.
I don't know who they could get. They've kind of messed things up for themselves by putting all their faith in him. But I think also part of the cognitive decline with his maybe whatever he has, Alzheimer's, whatever he has coming on.
Dementia
is the anger if you're told that you're in decline. You know what I mean?
That's a real thing, yeah.
Right, because you get angry because you're like, no, I'm not, because you don't realize you are. So I'm wondering, because that, I don't know, it fits the puzzle.
You know, my father-in-law has Lewy body dementia.
Mm.
He doesn't think he does.
Yeah.
But they've, you know, the tests are there, the cognitive decline is there. But if you tell him, he'll say, no, I don't. I don't have that.
Yeah, I've witnessed that too. It's true. They don't think they do, and they get angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive.
He gets upset.
Because you don't. I mean, that's got to be a nice way to have it happen, though, to not realize it's happening. It'd probably be a lot worse if you realized it was happening for yourself.
I don't know. I think I'd want to know. I think if I was losing it, I'd be like, please, somebody tell me I'm losing it and accept it. Like you said, they won't accept it. They don't accept it. But I think I'd want to know. That brings to mind the old age-old question. Dr. Blodgett and I have talked about this many times. If you could know the exact date that you were going to die, would you want to know?
Yes.
You would?
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
For sure.
Wow.
For sure. Yeah. Because that gives you a timeline to work against. I love a deadline. Literally, that'd be my deadline. But I love a deadline. Because I get so much done when I have a deadline.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I'm very efficient. Procrastination is the art of efficient living, and I'm very, very good at it.
Procrastinating?
Yes.
Mello is with me today, Open Line Friday. We'd love to hear from you, 673-5890. We have right now something called the Ultimate Sports Bash going on. And we have been asked to talk about it and sponsor it and be a part of it. And I'm like, yeah, I love sports. So what it is it's a, call it a convention, sports con, right? Ultimate Sports Con, Sports Bash. It's in Salt Lake, so you have to really want to go. It's in Sandy, so not technically Salt Lake, but in Salt Lake Valley. And the Sports Bash is happening today and tomorrow, so there's 2 days worth of it. And it's basically a reminiscence and a chance to rub shoulders with big Utah sports stars of the past, but also of the present. For instance, you'll have Brian Russell and Greg Ostertag from the Jazz will be there. But also, Cam Rising of the Utes will be there. Britton Covey, former Ute, will be there, who's in the NFL now. Nick Raimondo, former Real Salt Lake goalkeeper. Aaron Wheels, Fotheringham. And Jaron Hall, former BYU quarterback. They will all be there. They've got a car show going. They're giving away on both days a Ford F-150. So you can register to win a free truck, just like the ones that are being given to all the Utah players as part of their NIL money, scholarship money, and not scholarship, but, you know, the money they get for using their name, image, likeness, et cetera.
That's awesome.
It's all going on, again, today and tomorrow at the Mountain America, is that what it's called? Mountain America Expo Center in Sandy. And I want to give you two free tickets right now. So let's start. We'll do some text ones later. Let's do phone call ones right now, though. So Mello is ready to answer your call. If you want to go to the expo today and or tomorrow, the phone number is 435-673-5890. We'll need your name and your phone. Your name and your email address, because they're going to email you some e-tickets to get in. Again, 673-5890. That's our area code, 673-5890, if you want to go to the Ultimate Sports Bash.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning, 938 on KDXU. I'm Andy. She's Mello. Hi, Mello.
Good morning.
Doing all right?
Yes.
All right. I got to talk some painful talk here for a minute to all of us, most of us out there. Story on the wire today, basically saying what we all knew but didn't want to admit. And here it is. This is right from the newswire. Half of cancer deaths among American adults 30 and over are linked to our behavior. A new study from the American Cancer Society says these modifiable risk factors include smoking, drinking, diet, etc. Smoking was the most common. About 30% of all cancer deaths are from smoking. Guess what comes in number two?
Processed food?
Excess body weight.
Ooh, ouch.
Now, I don't know too many people who don't have some excess body weight. Unfortunately, the human body, as it ages, produces fewer of the chemicals that help us stay thinner. Women have to deal with menopause and a loss of hormones there. Men, the beer gut thing, you know, and, it happens. We all pick up a few pounds here or there. And I say y'all, I am stereotyping a little bit. It's not all of us, but it is a big chunk of us.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Actually, pun intended. But being overweight or obese is clearly linked to the development of 13 types of cancer. Breast cancer in postmenopausal women, colorectal cancer, endometrial cancer, esophageal cancer, gallbladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, a thyroid cancer, and uterine cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a hard conversation to have because I'm not doing anything different than I have my whole life. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had to replace basketball with pickleball. I would always play basketball my whole life. 2, 3, 4 times a week I would play basketball. Mm-hmm. That was my choice. That was my favorite thing to do exercise-wise. And I loved playing basketball. And I would still play now if I didn't have a screwed up leg and can't do it. So I play pickleball. Still try to play as often as I can. But I actually eat quite a bit less than I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I exercise for the most part as much, and yet gain weight.
No, I know. I lost a bunch of weight, and then I gained a bunch back. So yeah, I'm on that roller coaster,
Me too. Well, and then you add into factors like, and I tell people this, and maybe some don't believe me, and some are like, yeah, come on. I had never in my life been in the hospital, not one day, not 1 minute in the hospital. Until, for my wife to have babies, but until I hit the age of 50, and I've been in the hospital 7 times in the last 8 years.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't change my behavior. I mean, it was stuff like kidney stones, and I had sepsis 3 times.
Oh my goodness.
It's a long circumstance involving neuropathy in my feet and things like that. But basically, each time I was in the hospital, there's a recovery period. And in a lot of cases, the recovery period is you cannot go play pickleball. You cannot go work out like you like to.
Rest.
You know, you have to rest. Yeah, basically. And each time I had to rest, I gained weight. And, you know, so you factor that in as we've gotten older, too. And you're just like, man, what in the world am I supposed to do?
Right. It gets harder and harder to also get that motivation. Like, for me, anyway.
Well, if it hurts, you don't want to do it, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. It's kind of hard to get through.
Yeah. I remember when I was, I think I was 14, and my brother, who is 6 years older than me, he was about 12, and he was 18. Mm-hmm. We went to a pizza place. It was me, my brother, and my mom. We went to a Pizza Hut, and we ordered two large pizzas. And my brother, my 18-year-old brother, ate one large by himself. I ate seven out of the eight pieces of the other large, and my mom had one piece.
No.
And we were all full. And like none of us overate. Well, not technically. I guess technically we did, but we were all satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, I couldn't eat. I don't know if my life depended on if I could eat seven pieces of pizza of a large pizza. No. I don't think I could. Maybe if you sliced them really, really small.
Right. If I gave you $100 if you did it, maybe you would do it.
I don't know. I don't think I could.
Really?
It would hurt. And now I eat, I eat two, maybe. Mm-hmm. When we had pizza, I usually have two pieces of pizza.
Yeah.
Maybe a breadstick, and that's it. And I'm full. I'm not only full, I'm stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at this and I talk to my wife about this. I'm like, sometimes life doesn't seem fair, does it? Like, and I saw this the other day. It was a meme, but it was a pretty good one. It was the unfairness of life. When you're young, so there are three things you need in life: money, time, and energy. When you're young, you have lots of time and you have lots of energy, you don't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
When you're middle aged, you have enough money and you have enough energy, you don't have any time.
Right.
And when you get to be older, you have money and you have time, you don't have any energy.
It's true.
And that's one of the unfairnesses of
life. It is unfair, right.
You see guys my age driving around in sports cars. They can finally afford a sports car.
But nobody's looking.
I know. You wanted the sports car to pick up the hot chick, right? And then, you're an old guy now.
So yeah, it depends on how much money you have, I guess.
Well, there is the whole sugar daddy factor, for sure. So in order to try to, I think this is really, I know, the public health officials have been telling us for years, we need to modify our behaviors so that we aren't causing ourselves to get cancer. And cancer is a tough thing. We all have loved ones that we've lost through cancer.
Mm-hmm.
My mother-in-law, the first one that comes to mind for me. And it's tough for us to say, cancer is your fault. And most doctors will say, well, it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. This wasn't your fault. It just happens. And maybe they're saying that to be nice. Maybe it's true in some cases as well. And right now there are people listening who have cancer or dealing with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, this is really the first time where the actual medical establishment is saying, look, guys, here it is. You are causing a big chunk of cancer.
Yeah.
Your fault.
I do agree with that. I also think that the foods that are being created for people are very highly processed.
But I will say this about that.
Mm.
They wouldn't make them if we didn't want them, if we didn't buy them.
Right, but are they adding things to them to make them more addictive, kind of like cigarettes with the big tobacco companies? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm a conspiracy theorist. You know that. So.
I do. Well, but I mean, what you say has an air of truth to it. But I think even beyond that, and I do believe they do add things like to caffeinated sodas to get us to be addicted to them.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, too, is it we wouldn't have even tried them. If our friends weren't all drinking that, that dirty Dr. Pepper or whatever it is, mm-hmm. then we probably wouldn't have tried it. Or, the Twinkie or I think about the Twinkie and its 20-year shelf life or whatever. And,
right.
There are foods out there that are just really, really good. And right. we're like, hey, yeah, I'm going to eat that. Going out to eat is a great example, right? If we eat at home, we tend to eat a lot healthier.
It's true. It's true. And I've been going through a kitchen remodel, so I've been eating out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard. Like, I would just love to have a home-cooked meal, and it's just impossible.
Come on over. I'll make one for you.
Yeah, as long as you smoke it.
I'll smoke some meat for you.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, we go to restaurants, and my wife she's like, I like meeting with your family. I like eating out with your family, but I don't like eating out over and over again because I always eat more than I mm-hmm. eat more than I was going to. And I eat things that, we went to Chili's the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Love their queso, right? Their skillet queso.
I didn't remember to order that, and I got the chips and salsa. I was really mad.
Their skillet queso is so good. But here I am gorging myself on chips and queso and salsa. And would I do that at home? Probably not, no.
Mm-hmm.
I might have a little, but I wouldn't gorge myself on it. And in fact, I ate so many chips and queso that when the meal came, I didn't eat very much of my burger because I was so full mm-hmm. from all the chips I ate. But
it also is expensive to eat out.
Yeah,
I went to Chick-fil-A the other day, picked up two kids' meals, and mine.
$40.
$30.
$30, yeah.
For three people.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's take a break. I was going to say, so, but we know the answers. You know, when we're talking about modifying cancer, being the cause of cancer, we know the answers. Exercise more, eat healthier, don't smoke and drink. Mm-hmm. Don't spend a lot of time out in the sun. My wife is guilty. She is so guilty of that. She's like, I'm not going to get cancer. I love the sun. And she'll lay out in the sun and still, even at 50, I mean, she's 29. At 29, she'll lay out in the sun and, and, you know, and that's another cancer causer right there. Mm-hmm. The other thing, maybe the thing that we need to talk about more than anything else is we need to get tested for these things. We need, because anyone will tell you, if you can catch it earlier, mm-hmm. It increases your chances of not only just surviving, but having a quality life in the time that you do. I lost a cousin to breast cancer. She had, you know, you go in and get the mammograms, right? And she did. She was pretty good about going in, but the mammograms missed it. And it wasn't a lump. She just had this on the side of her breast, just mm-hmm. this little kind of hardened area. And it didn't hurt. And it didn't show up on the mammograms. And so she was like, I think I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Then finally, I think it was after her third mammogram, one of the doctors said, and she said, yeah, this little hardened area is starting to hurt a little bit. And the doctor, and it didn't pick it up on the mammogram again. And the doctor said, let's bring you back and do an ultrasound. Mm-hmm. And let's investigate a little more. And they found that it was actually cancer. The sad thing is it was already stage four. She was already, and so this beautiful, she's younger than me. I think she's died at the age of like 51. Mm. Beautiful lady. She has four beautiful daughters and a great husband. And she's gone because they didn't catch it soon enough. So
sad.
Get screened. Get tested. Exactly. All right. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports. Just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU. Southern Utah's news talk leader.
I do have a few more passes to the Ultimate Sports Bash if you would like to go. Now, it's a big ask because it is up in Salt Lake Valley. But you know what? It's going to be pretty dang cool. There are going to be a bunch of celebrities there, including former jazz man Brian Russell and Greg Ostertag, as well as, Cam Rising, Britton Covey, Jaron Hall. Who else am I missing? Aaron Fotheringham, Nick Raimondo, plus a car show. And they're giving away one today and one tomorrow, Ford F-150 pickups at the Ultimate Sports Bash. I have free tickets for you. So this whole thing is free, except you do have to drive to Sandy. So if you're willing to do that, give me a text right now at 435-467-5842. Just text BASH. And then I will need to follow up and get your name and email address because they're going to send you an e-ticket so that you can get in absolutely free. But again, text me 435-467-5842. Mello is with me today. It's Open Line Friday. Love to hear from you, too, if you want to call 673-5890. Mello, do you remember, did you ever see the play Saturday's Warrior?
Yes.
Did you ever see that?
Yes.
Do you remember there's a song called Zero Population? They're trying to pull the oldest boy away from his family. And so they do this whole production, and it was a musical, and they do this whole production. Zero population is the answer, my friend.
Okay.
And they're basically trying to get him to, because he's from a big Mormon family, mm-hmm. get him to eschew his roots and to join the zero population crowd.
Okay.
When I first saw this play, I was maybe 10, I don't know, mm-hmm. 9. I didn't get all of that. But there was, I guess, in the 70s, 60s and 70s, a big, they call them eugenics movement, a movement to get men to get sterilized and to stop having babies.
Wow.
Around the country. And there was a group of people out there, and they had actually formed, and led by the lady who started Planned Parenthood, by the way, that we needed to slow down the population of the world because eventually it was going to lead to man-made climate change and famine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, I mean, they were hardcore. They were, you know, they were going around telling people you need to be fixed and, and all this stuff. And the Chinese government bought into it. And Chinese government for a while said you can only have one child.
Yeah. How'd that work out?
Not so good. In fact, well, yeah, that's a whole nother story. Yes. But basically, great article online talks about population, overpopulation, how it is a myth. The article is on AIER.org. That's American Institute for Economic Research. And he spends, the author is a guy by the name of Aidan Grogan. He spends the first three-fourths of the article talking about all the myths and all the groups organized to try to get zero population. And then in the end, he says, here's why it is a myth. Number one, the idea that it was changed, man-made. Man was causing climates to change. As it turns out, humans have no detectable impact on hurricanes or other large storms in our world. They get reported on more, but we don't actually have more than we used to. Greenland's ice sheet, they're talking about the ice sheets and the, you know, the glaciers melting and stuff. As it turns out, the Greenland's ice sheet is the exact same size it was 80 years ago.
Really?
Uh-huh. And the net economic impact of human-induced climate change will be minimal through at least the end of the century, which they say by the end of the century, our population will actually start going down because where it used to be the average family in the modern world was having 3.1 children, it's down to 2.1 now.
Really?
And dropping. We, according to statistics online, the population of the world will peak in about 50 years, and the population will actually start going down as people choose to have fewer children.
And, so sad.
Yeah. So,
I did watch a documentary on Netflix.
I love documentaries.
And it was The Man Who Fathered 1,000 Children or something like that. Did you see that?
I heard of it. This is a guy that ran a sperm bank or
He donated to sperm banks, but he would go all over the world and donate. He's like this blonde hair, blue eyed guy from like, Switzerland or like somewhere over there. And you're only allowed to do, like, five times, like, have so many children. And he was just circumventing the whole system. He was, like, in a race with one of his buddies to see who could have the most offspring.
Wow.
It was wild. And so all these kids in this neighborhood, like, that you're going to school with is now your half-brother or your half-sister. So then it comes into the fact that as these kids get older,
they can't mate, right?
Yeah, they can't be together, but there's a draw because you're related and you have that connection already.
Wow.
It was three episodes and I watched every one of them.
I'm going to have to check that one out. That is fascinating stuff. I just hope that people understand that having, if you have a family and you raise your kids the right way, having families is not a bad thing. Despite what they, for the last 100 years, they've been trying to tell us, having children is the worst thing you can do for the planet. No, it's not. Actually, having the children and raising them to be responsible adults is the best thing you can do for this planet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I've got one you can try next. Like, I'll send her to you, see how well you do with her.
I'm 58. I already raised my kids. So, and I have a sign over here that says, raise your kids, you can spoil your grandkids.
That's true.
Spoil your kids and you'll end up raising your grandkids. So, words to live by. Thanks, Mello. Good to talk to you. By the way, Monday, Eva Fry, comedian, will be on the show. It's going to be fun. Talk to you then.